Matthew chapter 6. We're going to start in just a minute in verse 19. As we continue our study from the Sermon on the Mount, calling sermons from the sermon, the last couple of lessons that we've looked at, or actually the last three lessons, have come from a section of Scripture preceding this one we're going to look at this morning, where Jesus is warning those who are listening to him not to practice their righteousness to be seen by others. Don't let that be your motivation. And then he kind of takes off on a side road talking about prayer. We spent the last couple of weeks talking about prayer. But as we pick up in verse 19, Jesus gives a series of metaphors, three metaphors actually, that deal with what I think of as kingdom perspectives. You know, if you go all the way back to week one, when we started this series, I mentioned a couple of things. One is that I believe almost everything in this great sermon is about righteousness, meaning right, being in a right relationship with God, right living. But also everything in this sermon is about the kingdom, God's kingdom, and how those of us who are striving to be subjects in God's kingdom should live, how we should, you know, what things that we should do, what we should be about. And in these three metaphors that Jesus gives, beginning in verse 19 of Matthew 6, Jesus, I believe, is explaining the perspective of one who is a subject in his kingdom, what the perspective that we should have on different things in life. And each one of these metaphors that deals with a perspective includes a choice that has to be made. You know, I'm very much a believer that Scripture teaches that God has made us creatures of free will. We have the free will to choose what direction we're going to go. Whether we're going to serve God or we're going to serve ourselves, we have the ability to choose. And each one of these metaphors it deals with a choice that we have to make. The first one of the metaphors, and if you've got the bulletin, I've got some blanks to fill in. I've got some questions that you're welcome to write all over it if you want. But the first one of those metaphors, the first blank that you've got, is the metaphor of treasure. And this is probably the one that of these that we probably know the best. But he says this in verse 19, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal." And then in verse 21 he says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." What do you think of when you think of treasure? Do you think of pirates looking for buried treasure where X marks the spot on the map? You know, one thing I think of with treasure is when someone, has something that they think isn't worth anything, and then they find out later it's really worth a lot. I love those kind of stories. And one of those, which you may have heard this before, but in 1989, there was a man who was at a flea market in Pennsylvania, and he purchased a painting in a frame. He hated the painting, but he loved the frame, and he paid $4 for it. And he got home, and he was going to take the painting out of the frame, and he was going to reuse the frame for something else. Well, he took the painting out of the frame, and when he took the painting out of the frame fell apart, so the frame, he couldn't even use it. But on the back of the painting, he found a folded up piece of paper. It said it was folded up about the size of a business envelope. And he pulled it off the back of the picture, and he opened it up, and it was a copy of the Declaration of Independence. Now, he didn't think anything about it. He just put it in a drawer and didn't worry about it. Well, 2 years later, he was showing that to a friend of his and was like, "Wait a minute. Let's investigate this thing." Well, what they found out was not only was it a copy, it was an original copy of the Declaration of Independence that a few months after they made that discovery sold for $2.4 million at auction. And then a couple years later sold for $8 million. That's the kind of thing I think of when I think of treasure. But What did Jesus mean when he said, when he's talking about treasure? He's saying, you know, don't put your treasure on earth, but put your treasure in heaven. What's he talking about when he's talking about treasure? Well, I believe what Jesus means is about where we place our value, where we place our belief, where we place our faith. What is the thing in life that we love? What do we value? What do we believe in? What do we value? And what do we believe in? What do we love? Where is the emphasis of our life? It could involve money. It could involve, you know, things of monetary value. But anything where we place our value, that is our treasure. And Jesus says, wherever you put that value, what's also going to be there? Your heart, your actions, your life is going to follow where you place that value. And so again, what are the options that Jesus points out? He says, one, the warning, don't put your treasures on earth. So that's a choice. We can choose to put our value in the things of this earth. And he says, if you do that, what's going to happen? Moth and rust will destroy, and thieves will break in and steal. But that's option number one. Option number two is what? Value, treasure in heaven. And he says, of that, where you place your value, moth nor rust will destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. Now, I want to go on a little side road just for a second, then we'll come back to the main point. Jesus says very clearly, don't put your treasure on the earth. Now, is Jesus prohibiting, is he saying, I'm trying to see how I worded it in the bulletin, does this mean that we should not work and save up to take care of our family? Is that what Jesus is saying? And I want to definitively answer that no, that's not what Jesus is saying here. How do I know that? Well, I want to point you to a couple of passages. One in the Old Testament, one in the New Testament. Look in Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6 in verse 6. The writer says, he's looking at the ant as an example. He says, go to the ant, O sluggard, one who is lazy. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, verse 8, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. So looking to the gathering and preparing ahead of time as an example for what we should follow. 1 Timothy chapter 5, written by Paul. Verse 8, he says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So Jesus is not saying it's wrong to take care of your family. It's wrong to have a bank account, to have savings. But what is wrong? Putting your faith in those things. Putting the value of your life in those things. Is money inherently evil? Well, what did Paul say about money? I just read from 1 Timothy 5. 1 Timothy 6, he says the love of money is the root of all evil. The problem comes when that's where we place the value of our life, the emphasis of our life, the faith of our life in money. We put our value there, it gets to be a problem. But let's think about this choice. You know, I believe that, at least for me, you know, every day I fight the temptation to choose to put my value in this earth. Every day I fight that. Because I believe that I am being tempted every day, and Satan is telling me, you know, if you just had whatever, fill in the blank. It could be a change in life circumstance. It could be that if you had a better car, a better house, a better job, you know, whatever it is, gold, money, silver, win the lottery, whatever, you know, game you play with yourself, if I just had that, then what? Then I would be happy. Then I would be content. Then I would be fulfilled. But what does Jesus say is going to happen when we put our value in all of those things? What's going to happen to those things? They're going to go away, right? You know, I was thinking about when I was preparing this week about the stock market. And if you're invested in the stock market, and you... Let's just forget that there's insider trading laws and all that kind of stuff. But let's say you have an investment and you find out that this investment is likely going to tank, right? 2 months from now, this investment is going to go south. What are you going to do? You're going to invest in something else, right? You know, if there is a really strong possibility that what I'm invested in is going to fail, I'm going to look for somewhere else that's going to have a greater chance of success to invest in. Well, guess what? We know that if we put our value in the things of this life, they're going to fail. It's 100% guaranteed. It's going to happen in either one of two ways. We're going to lose it in this life. Okay? You think about everybody that was affected with the storms that we had a couple days ago. I mean, that happened in an instant, right? I mean, 1 minute, everybody's fine. The next minute, buildings are leveled. People have lost, you know, they've lost relatives. They've lost all their possessions. They've lost everything in an instant. You can lose it in, you know, you can lose it through bad investments. You can lose it through bad business ventures. You can lose it through losing your job and you have to use your savings to take care of your family. You can lose it in an instant. But if you don't lose it in this life, when are you going to lose it? You're going to lose it when you die because you can't take it with you. I mean, think about, I've got some passages here with this, you know, kind of reinforcing this idea. He says, Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 6, before he mentioned that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, he says, we brought nothing into this world and we cannot take anything out of this world. But if we have food and clothing with these, we will be content. James chapter 5 says, your riches have rotted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. And so we're either going to lose it in this life or we're not going to be able to take it with us to the next one. David read from Ecclesiastes earlier. I wrote down Ecclesiastes 5. He says, there is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner at his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. That's one way we can lose it. He is a father of a son, but has nothing in his hand. He came from his mother's womb. He shall go again, naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil, that he may carry away his hand. So again, if you think about this in terms of an investment, if we know the investment is going to lose, what are we going to do? We're going to look for a better investment. And Jesus says, the best investment, really the only one that makes any sense, is to invest your value where? In heaven. You know, everybody has to put the weight of their lives on something. You know, everybody puts faith in something. We tend to think of the word faith as a religious word, but everybody has faith in something. And Jesus says, of the two choices, you can choose to put your faith in the things of this earth, or you can choose to put your faith in things above. The benefit of the things above is that they're not going to fail. They're not going to go away. They can't be lost in a tornado. They can't be lost in a bad business venture. They can't be lost when you die. If your faith is in the things that are above, it's going to be there for eternity. That's where your value needs to be. And what are some signs to us that we have put our value in the wrong place? Well, I just mentioned one of those, and that is, if you're constantly playing the game of, I'll be happy when, then it should be a sign to us that our value's in the wrong place. If we're constantly going, if I just had that truck, then I would be happy. I just had a better house, or, you know, if I just had better shoes, whatever it is, then I would be happy. If we're playing that game constantly, then go, wait a minute. Because what always happens? If I get the truck, if I get the better shoes, if I get the better job, then what? I want something else, right? If I keep playing that game, going back to Ecclesiastes 2, Solomon, who I believe to be the writer of Ecclesiastes, said, come, let me test myself with pleasure. And he goes on to describe how he surrounded himself with all the wonderful things of life. That there was nothing he kept from himself. I mean, you think of it, you name it, he tried it. Money, servants, buildings, everything. And at the end he said what? It was meaningless. It was meaningless. It didn't do what I thought it was going to do. It was worthless. So if we're always playing that game with ourselves, even if it's subconsciously, you have to go, is my value in the wrong place? And the other sign that we put our value in the wrong place is they're not willing to listen to anything else. If our value is completely in the things of this earth, we're going to be closed off to other things. We're going to be closed off to the message of God. And I have been fortunate to see this, dramatically see this, in being able to have done some evangelism work in southern Honduras. You know, if you were to take, in the United States, in most places in the U.S., if you were to go to, and try to do door-to-door evangelism, just knock on the door, somebody opens the door and say, I want to talk to you about Jesus. What's going to happen 9 times out of 10? No thanks, they're going to shut the door, right? We would go, many, many times went down to a place 4 hours south of the capital of Honduras, in the middle of the jungle. These are people that their homes are literally 4 sticks and a tarp. And I can only think of 1 or 2 places where I would walk up to their home and they would turn me away. Now, what's the difference? The difference is most of us in the United States have put our value here. And we're not lacking anything. We're not lacking anything. And so we don't feel like we need anything beyond ourselves. Down there, they have nothing. They have absolutely nothing. And so they will listen to you and listen to what you have to say because they haven't closed themselves off because they're seeking. They don't have anything. And so the more we have, the more likely we are. The more we put our value in things, the more likely we are to close off our minds to the message of God. It's harder for us to recognize that we need something other than ourselves. The second metaphor that he mentions comes in verse 22, and it's the metaphor of the eye. The eye. He says the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? You know, I'm very sensitive to thinking about eyes because I have really bad vision. Really bad. It's corrected. I have contacts where I can see. But without my contacts, my vision is 20/800. Now, how many of you in here have 20/20 vision? Even if you don't know what that means, a few of you raise your hand. So let me explain to you what 20/800, how that compares to 20/20. So if you have 20/20 vision, and we went down to the road to look at our sign, the Pleasant View Church of Christ sign, and I'm standing, so I think Heather, you raise your hand, 20/20. If I'm standing 20 feet away from that sign without my contacts in, I would see it the same way as Heather standing 800 feet away from the sign. That's what my vision is like without my contacts. And so every morning when I get up, I have a choice. Am I going to go through life not being able to see anything? Could you imagine me getting in a car with that kind of vision? I mean, I would terrorize the city if I got into a car with that kind of vision. So I have a choice. Am I going to try to navigate life like that? Or am I going to put in my lenses and have 20/20 vision and live with normal eyesight? Well, that's a trivial thing of saying we have a choice with our eyes of how we're going to see the things around us. We have a choice. Jesus says we have a choice to focus on the things that are healthy or to focus on the things that are bad. The things that are healthy bring light, and the things that are bad bring darkness. And just like me trying to navigate without my contacts in, if we try to navigate the world in darkness, we're going to cause a lot of chaos. We're going to cause a lot of problems. But we have a choice of what we're going to focus on in life. God has given us the choice. And just like with treasure, there's that temptation that says, hey, there's a whole lot of fun stuff out there that's going to make your life awesome. Let's go do those things. Let's focus on those things that are going to make life better. And Paul, in Galatians chapter 5, he is comparing those who follow the Spirit to those who follow the flesh. And I think this is a similar kind of option to what Jesus is talking about with the eye. We decide what we're going to focus on. We decide what we're going to look at. We decide what we're going to follow. And Paul said, I say to you, if you walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh. For these are opposed to each other, to keep you from doing the things you want to do. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. He says, now the works of the flesh are evident: sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and things like these. I warn you, as I warned you before, that those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. Those would be things of saying, I'm filling my life with the darkness. I'm filling my life with the bad, the unhealthy. But he says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. That's filling your eyes with the light. Filling your eyes with the healthy. We have the ability to choose what we're going to focus on. Could that mean what we're looking at with our eyes? Yes. Could that also mean what we do with our bodies? Where, you know, what actions we complete? Yes. We have the ability to choose what we're going to be about. And Jesus says, if you're part of the kingdom, you're going to focus on the healthy, not the bad. You're going to be filled with light, not with darkness. John in 1 John chapter 1 says, God is light, and in him is no darkness. So what is a consequence of focusing on the darkness? We're going to be separated from God. We're going to be separated from God. But we have the ability to choose to focus on the light and to be cleansed by Jesus to allow us to have a relationship with God. The third metaphor comes in verse 24. Verse 24, and I just wrote down the word master. Master, because Jesus says this, no one can serve two masters, thinking of a slave or a servant. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. And this is very similar to what Jesus said in Luke 16. No servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. So what does he say are the options? The options are you can choose to serve God or money. And money would be indicative of serving, again, self, serving the things in this life. You know, I am capable of taking care of myself through the acquiring of money. Or I can choose to serve God. Now, this is the same, really, as the first one. It's where am I putting the value of my life? But what's the point with this metaphor? The point is, you can't choose both. You can't choose both. Now, I'm going to give you a preview of lesson that's coming, Lord willing, if we get there. At the end of chapter 7, Jesus is going to go through another series of two things where you have choices. And one of those is a choice that those of us who have grown up in church have been singing about since we were little kids, the wise man and the foolish man. And in that lesson, I want to talk about, so many of us, we try to build our lives in both places. We try to build our lives on the rock and the sand at the same time. But the point here is that you can't choose both. You got to pick one. You can't serve both. But oh, how we try to serve both. I want a little bit of God, and I want a little bit of the world, right? But Jesus says you can't pick both. You got to be all in one way or the other. So choose which way you're going to go. And the only verse that I wrote down with this, other than Luke, was Joshua 24. And most of us know this passage, but children of Israel are finally in the promised land. They've had a couple of battles. They've had some failures with their battles of not following God's instruction. And what does Joshua? Joshua gives this great speech to the people. And what does he say? He says, now, therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your father served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your father served in the region beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. And then we know the rest of this. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. the Lord. Joshua says the same thing that Jesus says. You have a choice, but you can only pick one. You can't serve both. You're either going to serve the other gods or you're going to serve Jehovah God. Jesus says you're either going to serve money, you're going to serve the things of this life, or you're going to serve me. You can't do both. And so all of us have the ability to choose. And everything in the world is telling us to choose the world, because that's where all the answers are. That's where all the happiness and the contentment and the fun, that's where all of that is. But Jesus says you can only pick one. You can only choose one. And so for all of us, we have to answer that question. Who are we going to serve? And who are we going to serve? And if you're here this morning and you've never made the decision to dedicate your life to serving God, to serving His Son Jesus, to following Him instead of yourself, then why wait another day? If you've never made the decision to do that, if you've never made the decision to be baptized, why wait another day? If you're here this morning and there's anything we could pray for you for, if you need encouragement from your brothers and sisters, if there's anything we can do for you, will you please come while we sing our invitation.